many of the studies were flawed because they didn't have the right people to compare to. They just had certain people who seemed to live long, but they didn't know, well, where, what were they like when they were younger. So we started looking around to say, how could we really find out the important things in life, not just do you get more likely to catch a cold when you're stressed, but mm-hmm. who gets cancer and who gets heart disease and who lives long and who dies young. You know, we all know that some of it's biological, genes, but genes really only account for about a third of the variation in how long people live. So I started looking around for an archival data set that we could adapt and bring and make a longevity study, and that's when we came across the Terman data.
Tell me about Lewis Terman. Who was he?
Well, he was a very interesting guy. He was first he was interested in intelligence, and so he developed the Stanford-Binet intelligence test, which most people have heard about, test. And he was also interested in figuring out, do young, bright children grow up to be kind of weird and nerdy, or do they grow up to be intellectual leaders that society should value? And the stereotype at the time was, you know, those bright kids, they're never going to amount to much. They're smart, but they're too weird. So he said, well, I'm going to follow them. So he recruited over 1,500 boys and girls, starting in 1921, and he started following them up. And, you know, by the time they were 1940, he had a lot of information about them. He knew their personalities from their parents rated them, their teachers rated them. He interviewed them. He had doctors examine them. He tracked them. He saw how they did in school, when they got married. And Terman died in about 1956. The study continued ever since. So Terman was really a kind of a pack rat. You wouldn't believe the amount of information he collected on all these people. When we looked over,
and that was before computers.
Well, that's the interesting thing. You know, it's mostly still on questionnaires and in file cabinets.
Oh my God!
So some of it's been put into computers, but we still have to go back to the original files a lot of times and improve the data, make it usable by modern scientific means. But Terman, because he was so meticulous. We have basically about over 10 million pieces of data from this archive.
I would guess that most of these kids from 1921 have passed on since, haven't they?
Yeah, although a lot of them lived till fairly recently. We estimate that there are only about two dozen who are still alive, maybe a few more. They've been dying, you know, pretty rapid pace in the last few years because the ones who are still alive would be in their 90s or over 100. But what we had to do was go and track down their death certificates from all around the country, find out where they died, and then get the death certificate and find out what they died from and how long they lived.
I was, you know, they have some of those internet classmate websites.
And right.
Maybe about a year ago, I was on one of them just kind of playing around. I graduated in 1968 from school in Dearborn, Michigan. And from a high school there. And so, you know, I just kind of wanted to check in on some of my old chums and classmates.
Right.
And it's remarkable, Howard, how many people, even from that time period, have died. And it's kind of sad because, you know, you remember them as you did when you last saw them. You know, they were all 17, 18 years old. And then you look and you see, you know, so-and-so passed away in Vietnam. So-and-so died of a car crash. And it's really jarring, you know that?
Well, I think what would be really interesting is if you actually thought back about what they were like even then, because one of the really intriguing things in the longevity project was that it's not random who lives long and who dies young. You know, sometimes accidents happen and nobody's to blame, but we found a lot of times people you could predict, and that's what a lot of the book is about. So if you think back to your high school classmates, and then look at who's died and who's still alive. You know, I'll bet you'll see some patterns there. You'll say, you know,
yeah,
this doesn't surprise me so much that this group of people have passed away.
Now, you got involved in this for 20 years. That's pretty long, too. Was there ever a point in this study that you wanted to cut it short and just say, hey, I got enough data. I'm going to start making some conclusions here.
Yeah, when the grant funding agencies say, well, you know, we're not giving you any more money, that's a good time to start saying,
end the project, right?
Yeah, we kept saying we were going to stop, and when we started out, we thought we would spend about 6 months to a year looking at this, and the deeper we got, the more interesting it got, and we still have some of our undergraduate students. They come up and they go, a 20-year study, you guys should get a life, you know. Stop this already. But more and more interesting questions keep popping up, and that's why we decided to write the book, The Longevity Project, because we wanted to pull together the 20 years of findings that we've been collecting.
Plus the 60 from before. I mean, an 80-year project. It's almost like a time capsule, isn't it?
It really is. You know, you go back and you see some of the games they were playing and some of the kinds of books they were reading. It is really interesting to see. But, you know, in many ways, the kinds of things that these people were doing are similar to the kinds of things that people are doing today. So you might think, well, that's not going to be relevant to my health and my long life. But in fact, it turns out it really is, because just like the children in the 1920s, some of them were real extroverted, and some were introverted. Today, some people are shy and some people are extroverted. And, you know, in those days, some of the parents got divorced, and today sometimes the parents get divorced, and on. So there's really a lot of parallels between how they lived then and how they lived and how people live today.
Well, and we're going to talk about all those personality traits and how they've affected people and their longevity. In 1921, when this started, how old were the kids? 5 years old? 10 years old?
On average, they were 10 years old, but some of them were young, as young as about five, four or five, and some of them were teenagers. So Terman was trying to just grab as many bright kids as he could and put them in the study. So once he found one who met his criteria, he entered them in the study. But they were born on average in 1910.
Were they primarily from a specific region of the country?
Yeah, the study was done in California, and the students were mostly recruited from Los Angeles areas and San Francisco.
Okay. Now, how does personality, you know, even in this childhood era, contribute to long life?
Well, we always think that certain things are going to be healthy and other things are going to be unhealthy. You always hear, cheer up, be optimistic, take it easy. Is that the key to long life? And so we decided to look into different aspects of personality. Personality is pretty stable across time. You know, if you go back and you see some of your friends from high school, you know, it's not so surprised that the most outgoing ones became the salespeople and the good talkers.
Mm-hmm.
But people do change. Some people, you know, were really shy and then they became, you know, much more extroverted and outgoing. So it's a good variable kind of to use, because it has some stability. It tells you something across the years, but then again, some people do change. So we went back and looked at in the 1920s, Dr. Terman had the parents and the teachers of the children rate them on all kinds of dimensions, and he was very thorough in this, you know, scale after scale and rating after rating. And we took those ratings and we turned them into modern personality scales by doing some studies on modern participants. So we have a good measure of what their personalities were like in the 1920s. And then we asked, well, the first question is, do some of them live longer than others? And so it was really exciting, you can imagine, because we were wondering if anything from the 1920s could predict how long they would live decades later. And so
the really
good news was that a lot of things did. And so then that really encouraged us to keep going with this study.